Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. It is NFL Week 5, Monday Night Football Edition. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined by a man that needs no introduction. We give him one anyways, the one, the only, Payne Insider. And Payne, it's a good thing you're still gainfully employed this fine Monday morning, because all 32 NFL coaches can't say the same thing.
I didn't know that was a thing. I don't know if I'm gainfully employed. I don't really...
Well, we actually have a
have
job.
Boss.
Well, that's a very good point, but we have work to do. We show up. We do our job. John Gruden may not have even been given a continental breakfast when he was called to the team facility at 5 a.m.
This was the podcast that started early that didn't start early. Like, we were up really early to record this thing. We've just been dicking around for like the last hour.
Well, that's what happens
yelling
when
at the board.
Well, that's what happens when an NFL market goes haywire 7+ days in advance on a football game that's starting to move at, what, 6:45 in the morning Pacific time?
Craziness. What are you trying to talk about here? The Gruden firing? I want to say this, and I don't mean this negatively, but anybody who likes the NFL could have broke this story yesterday, because it made absolutely no sense for them to retain him. And you start to ask... Kind of interesting timing. All that stuff started to leak this past weekend with Gruden's habits, smoking pot out by the bar. Which, you think that's coincidence?
I mean, what the hell's the difference if he's smoking pot out by the bar? I'd be doing harder drugs. We joked about it last week. If I had to deal with the Redskins' level of dysfunction, I'd be doing a lot harder drugs than just smoking weed.
Yeah, but this is like something that happened like years ago that just kind of came to light suddenly, coincidentally.
Oh, it's just like...
He was never escaping... This week, because what happens? You're facing Miami, and all of a sudden you potentially get a win there, and it's tough to fire someone after a win. So this was the ideal spot. This was the spot that made the most sense. And this has been looming for a long time, right? There's been a battle in media back and forth between Daniel Snyder and Jay Gruden, right? Gruden made comments that, hey, I found out through social media that we traded for Landon Collins and paid him all this money. And it was evident that... During the draft process, Daniel Snyder picked Haskins. Gruden didn't want that quarterback. He wanted a different one. So he hasn't been really playing him. He was forced his hand, obviously, against the Giants, and Haskins looked horrifically. But I know ownership wants Haskins under center. So let's see if that happens now with Bill Callahan.
Yeah, Bill Callahan. Couldn't cut it in Oakland. Couldn't cut it in Nebraska. Boy, I can't see this thing possibly getting worse in Washington before it gets better. But happy trails to Coach Gruden. I'm sure he'll land somewhere else where he can put his talents to good use. But Payne, Monday mornings, and we have Dr. Chow, who will join us later to talk about some of the injuries. We typically start our show with the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I want to try and amend kind of the syllabus of sorts and highlight two games yesterday for very different reasons. And one was the America's Game of the Week between the Cowboys and Packers. I mean, I tweeted out that when Dallas was down 31-3, it was potentially one of the most interesting and surprising score lines that we had seen at any juncture of the season. Now, I know Dallas was able to bridge that gap a little bit, coming up a bit short. We can talk about their clock management in a moment or two if you'd like. But when you dig into that game, Dak Prescott dwarfs Aaron Rodgers on the stat sheet. The Cowboys dwarf the Packers' offensive output. Yards per play staggering, where Dallas finishes at a plus 3.1 net differential. But what kind of things can we take away from a game like that, knowing that now the Cowboys have stepped up in class twice, and all they have is two losses to show for it?
Well, I had to dig into it because I'm an old man and fell asleep from the second Aaron Jones touchdown, and I woke up as Amari Cooper was kind of spinning and pirouetting into the end zone there. So I haven't watched about three quarters of that game yet. I'm going to do it today. But just looking at the box score, one of the question marks that I had, and it was shocking to me when I saw it last week, was like, what's going on with this Dallas defense? And I know everyone was raving about them pitching a shutout in terms of not allowing the Saints to score a touchdown on Sunday Night Football. But it's like, man, some of these underlying metrics are really bad, especially when you factor in the competition they faced. And they, from what I see in the box score, what I saw early on in that game, Aaron Jones was going wild. 16 of the 29 runs the Packers had graded successful. And it was kind of a one-dimensional offense for Green Bay and a lot of dink and dunk stuff. What I saw and what the numbers indicate were the Dallas Cowboys missing a ton of tackles yesterday because only 34% of Aaron Rodgers' passing yards came through the air. So there was, from what I saw, lots of poor tackling on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm not sure what's going on there. It's pretty concerning because it was a defensive unit that we thought was going to take a next step with this fantastic front seven. A lot of young guys at linebacker. The secondary was improving. It's so far through 5 weeks, and I had a chance this morning to pull this up. Cowboys are 24th in both rushing and passing success rate defense. So that side of the ball needs some help. I thought Dak was probably better than some of the numbers indicate. I saw the three interceptions, but was the ball a little bit early on in the game thrown behind Cooper? Certainly could have led him to a touchdown, but it was still a catchable ball. Cooper will tell you that. And then the interception there to start the fourth quarter, which I did see a highlight of. Gallup decided to continue his route into traffic rather than stop into the zone and get hit for a pass. So I'm not sure that one's on Dak either. And you mentioned the second one was just a ridiculously athletic play from Green Bay's secondary. When I look at this, just again, metrically speaking, Dak looked pretty good. 63% of his yards came through the air. 53% of his passes graded successful. His completion percentage was nearly 5% better than expectation. So to me, everything looked good on paper for Dak. Looked like Zeke had a pretty successful day running the ball. It's just one of those weird games where mistakes allowed the game to snowball for the Cowboys, it appeared.
Yeah, I mean, they got behind the eight ball early on, and it just never really got better for him, despite having some chances. One last thing on this game, and you brought an interesting point up, and I don't think a lot of our listeners always appreciate it, and clearly on the telecast, I'm not sure Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talked about it the same way that you and I would have if we were in that same spot. Cowboys, with about 3 minutes to go, get into plus field goal range. Well, can you walk us through a little bit of the thought process there and how the math guy suggests playing that final 3 minutes?
Well, you need two scores, right? So it does no good, you know, a la we talked about this Mike Tomlin against the Jaguars scoring a touchdown with no time left on the clock. Now, that wasn't the case here. Obviously, there's about a minute left, but there was a situation where I would have went and kicked the field goal early prior to the two-minute warning. And even Dak, like, that's one of his mistakes that I don't think a lot of people talk about. He takes off and runs for 5 yards on that final offensive play before the field goal attempt, right? And it wound the clock down to the two-minute warning. Had you gone and kicked your field goal early, because you do need two scores no matter what order they come in, there was an opportunity, and I'm not saying it was a good one based on how your defense played and how they were stopping the run, but there was an opportunity to kick your field goal and then potentially kick it away with 2 minutes and 36 seconds to go. You had one timeout left, and you had the two-minute warning. It would have been obviously a little dicey. But you need two scores. So having Dak run around there and then burn your one stoppage there by running for 5 yards short of the first down mark or the end zone, that certainly hindered your options for sure.
And I think it's important to say, too, and I didn't realize it yesterday, but it came up a number of times on telecast, close games get a lot more difficult. I don't think we've had a successful onside kick recovery with the new kickoff rules.
No. And I again, it's, you know, I get we're trying to protect guys and try to keep guys healthy. And most of that is because of the quarterback position, right? We're trying to keep those guys healthy. And I'm not saying, hey, let's have the special teams guys get injured. But at this point, we're just wasting everybody's time with this stuff. I mean, the AFL failed, but the one thing that they were pretty interesting about and you know, the league's trending towards an offensive game, their onside kick, air quotes, whatever they called it, was really interesting. What was it, like one play where the team needed to gain 15 yards, and if they did, they regained possession? I think we're probably trending towards that because this is just useless.
Yeah,
right? We're just lining. I mean,
I was going to say, I think it was, yeah, you got the ball on your own 35-yard line. It was essentially a 4th and 15 to try and pick up a first down. If he didn't get there, you'd turn the ball over wherever the spot was.
Yeah, and I mean, this is an offensive league. It sucks because how I look at it is, and eventually, you know, special teams is going to dwindle down and, you know, we're going to get to a spot where we have 18 regular season games and less preseason games. So, you know, the guys on the back end of this roster that need those preseason games and that need special teams are going to be probably unemployed. But for the health standpoint and for the air raid and fun and gun offenses where this is trying to trend as a league, these are the things that are probably going to start taking shape because the onside kick right now is just absolutely useless.
Yeah, you need to do something to try and amend it. It makes it impossible to come back down 2 scores in the final minutes of the game. You don't have the intrigue and arguably one of the most exciting plays in about a minute, minute and a half to go, and you have the onside kick and at least the potential for a 50-50 jump ball. From the afternoon game pain to last night's game, and I'm not sure if everybody, our listeners, watch it in its entirety, you have Indianapolis go into Kansas City, win outright 19-13 as a 10.5-point underdog, total in the mid-50s, never even came close to sniffing. And you look at some of the numbers here, the Colts 15-plus minutes of time of possession. The Chiefs were minus a 75 in net penalty yards, means that they gave up a ton of field position. The Chiefs did win the yards per play battle, but we saw Frank Reich, and I described it to you over text, almost a Picasso-type performance, knowing what it was going to take for his team, not only to cover, but to go into hostile territory and win in primetime.
Colts obviously get their playoff revenge. And what's interesting is after the game, Frank Reich said he had a feeling this would happen. Right, he said this was like the best week of practice the team had had since he joined the Colts organization. And I believe his quote was, because I listened to the press game, the post-game press conference, and it was like, you could tell we were just hungry all week. There was something different about this week. I think we all felt it. It was palpable. You know, we walked in here with a lot of confidence is basically what he said. Defensively is where this team gets just an absolute load of credit. The three guys that we said, monitor, let's see if they were out, they were all out. And so credit to Matt Eberflus and the Colts defense holding Mahomes to 13 points, his lowest as a starter. It didn't look good early either because Mahomes came out. He was 12 for 15 in the first quarter. He was on pace for like 520 passing yards after the first quarter. It's like, sheesh.
His touchdown pass was incredible.
It was absolutely bananas. But the defensive line started to get some pressure and wreaked some havoc. The offensive line, which we've talked about, had a couple injuries on it for the Chiefs, and then Patty Mahomes gets injured. He gets rolled up on, and from that point forward, he just wasn't the same. And then again in the second half, his left tackle kind of in his back pedal lands on his ankle and re-injures it. And so he was hobbling around out there. And after that point, Mahomes is a different player. But the one thing that we mentioned last Thursday, it was vital that the Colts kept this within distance so they could rely on their offensive line to kind of ground and pound the Chiefs down. And that's exactly what happened. The offensive line took over. Marlon Mack was fantastic. Wilkins was great for stretches. Even Nyheim Hines was very good. So as long as the game was close, the offensive line could lean on that defensive line who had two injuries to it, right? We came into this game, we're like, oh man, we're worried about the Colts injuries. Jones goes out, another guy in the defense goes out, guy in the secondary goes out. Sammy Watkins all of a sudden wasn't there, so you're down Watkins and Hill offensively. Chiefs left that game beaten and battered, and that is the reason why we are seeing Houston on this fine Monday morning, now a 6-point dog as opposed to a 7.5-point dog just about an hour ago.
Amazing how things go. And I don't want to be the one to nitpick and say anything, and I know you watched that game. The only question that I had for the Colts, and it didn't come back to haunt them, you've been moving the football exceptionally well between the tackles. You get inside the red zone, have a chance to salt the game away. I think the score at the time was 13-10, and you decide to run wide with a pitch that gets blown up inside the 5-yard line. That was the only complaint I had about what the Colts did offensively from a play-calling standpoint the entire second half.
The one, I believe it was Tyrann Mathieu, blew it up.
Yeah, the pitch out. I think it was to Jordan Wilkins. I mean, all they'd done is pounded Mac inside the tackles. They were getting 4 to 5 yards easily. And I think it was a 2nd-and-2 situation that became 3rd-and-7. And then Jacoby Brissett had to throw the ball away on 3rd down, which forced them, instead of being able to take the game from 13 to 10 to 20 to 10, they kicked the field goal and go up 16-10 instead.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the play-by-play data right now. You're right. I don't know why they did that.
That was the
They've been very successful. Yeah, they've been very successful pounding it between the tackles, and at that point, Jones was out. And we know the linebacking core is an issue. And so from what I saw, and I haven't watched any of the film or the tape yet, but linebacker's not able to get off the block. They've never been able to trigger downhill. It's really a something they need to address in the draft because they just don't have linebackers. And when Jones goes out, the linebackers get exposed even more. And what's really interesting, I was kind of thinking about this last week. You know, they're one big run stuffer away and one really good middle linebacker away from having a pretty damn good defense, the Chiefs, because secondary, who I said was like top nine in defensive pass efficiency coming in, I thought they held their own. They held their own pretty well again. Jacoby Brissett did not do much. 151 passing yards, only about a third of them through the air. So secondary was fantastic again for the Chiefs. They just didn't get much help in the ground game.
Yep. I will say I have no understanding of what offensive pass interference is in the National Football League these days, but that's a different discussion for a different day because it'll take what should be a short Monday podcast and turn it into a 47-hour diatribe. So I'll leave that low-hanging fruit there for another day's worth of discussion. But just wanted to get your take on those two games, Payne, because I think all four of those teams, you know, not only do they have some relevance as far as the national landscape, but teams that I really believe are going to be in the thick of the playoff race, if not Super Bowl contenders, as we get deeper into the campaign. Real quick on some of the look-ahead numbers as we approach Week 6. I know last weekend we didn't see a whole lot of market overreaction. Don't see a ton this week, just some modest movement. Wanted to pick your brain a little bit, and we'll actually start in your backyard. Look-ahead number had the Redskins a 6.5-point favorite against the Dolphins. Now we've seen that number 3.5-4 at Foxbet for this coming week. Clearly the Redskins look like a dumpster fire the entire second half against New England.
They did, and I think partly some of this movement down is the idea that Miami is showing some fight now, right? They put up like 6.8 yards per play in the first half against the Chargers. They outgained the Cowboys in the first half on the road. So, you know, Miami isn't talented. And I think that's probably, you know, the difference between tanking and not tanking. Like, they're just void of talent. The last two games, there's been, to my eye, a lot of energy, a lot of effort for the Dolphins. So I think that's a positive here coming off the bye week, although that hasn't been really a positive thing since the new CBA, and we can probably touch on that a little bit later. We talked about the writing being on the wall for Jay Gruden, and I think odds makers were smart enough to know that a little bit. Jay Gruden gone, which quarterback's going to start? You know, is it going to be Haskins, who the owner wants, or is it going to be one of the vets? I think that's partly why this line is opened a little shorter. Obviously, the performance against New England, but no one expected them to win that game, right? Close as high as 17 some places. So losing that game shouldn't really impact the market, in my mind. I think it really has a lot to do with what we've seen from Miami showing energy and effort the last two games, and then potentially a change at quarterback to Haskins, who, candidly speaking, has not looked very good. In my eyes, really in the preseason or against the Giants defense.
No, you'd expect if you can't move the football against the Giants defense, that's not exactly a recipe for success. So as you mentioned, it'll be very interesting to see how this Redskins team rallies or continues to fall apart at the seams given the change in head coach and ultimately who the man will be under center. Rams 49ers, what looks to be or will be a huge showdown in the NFC West. Of course, as we record this on a Monday morning, we haven't seen the 49ers performance off the bye against the Browns, a game that we'll preview later in the show. But as far as the Rams are concerned, you see the Rams on a look-ahead number, a 5.5-point favorite. They go up to Seattle, stub their toe as Greg Zuerlein misses for what's for him a chip shot field goal inside 50 yards to give them the win. Number goes from 5.5 down to 4.
That's really funny. And I guess losing in primetime because of a missed chip shot for Greg the Leg and having Seattle pull like another luck box victory out because of Russell Wilson heroics is cause for a line drop here. If San Francisco wins tonight, it's going to be interesting to see where this line goes. Probably a game we're going to talk about on Thursday, I would think.
Yeah, it'll be a game, I think, that makes the 5-game rotation on Thursday.
So I'm intrigued to see where this line potentially goes if San Francisco wins and covers tonight. That's for sure. Again, what I saw from the Rams, I was a little bit impressed last week. I really was. I thought Goff was better than I anticipated. The ridiculous interception by Tedrick Thompson was really an Everett drop. That is an on golf. I anticipated them, Greg the Leg, making that field goal. I can't figure out, and this is probably going to be a rant, and I have some of my guys going back to look. The last like two or three seasons, and let's call it like two seasons plus this year so far, I would have to guess off the top of my head, half of Seattle's wins have been absolute luck Bach victories or Russell Wilson just pulling a miraculous like fourth quarter rabbit out of the hat. I know they're talking about a contract extension. This is a billion-dollar franchise that's literally a two- or three-win team without Russell Wilson. He deserves $100 million a year. That's what he's worth. That's his value to the organization.
Give him equity in the franchise for what he does for that team week in, week out.
Pete did everything he could in that fourth quarter to blow the freaking game. There is not a lot of stuff going on there with that coaching staff, I can tell you firsthand, it is not the best coaching staff right now. And Russell Wilson is just making everyone look like they're competent right now. It is wild to watch, but good for Russell Wilson. Great quarterback, extremely underrated, extremely undervalued. He needs to be in conversations with the Tom Brady's because he is that valuable to this organization.
Yeah, what he does week in, week out.
By the way, we were talking Redskins-Miami look-ahead line, were we not? Or no, Rams-San Francisco look-ahead line.
Yeah, but
that,
I mean,
that veered way left.
But I figured that's how it was going to devolve. I mean, you had to mention Russell Wilson and why the market has changed a little bit as far as perception on the NFC West as a whole. So I think it's definitely bears noting how important Russell Wilson is, the impact he has week in, week out, and what he means not only to his franchise, but obviously the fate of all four teams in that division. Arizona, of course, not withstanding as they got their first win this weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals.
They got to figure out their red zone offense. Like,
what you mean spreading it out and trying to go five wide receivers with an offensive line that can't block and running screens to a 97-year-old Larry Fitzgerald isn't the ideal red zone offense?
I get that you don't have a great offensive line and you have to be able to run in the red zone still in 2019 to really have an efficient, successful offense. But we just got to figure something out on how to score in the red zone. I don't know what he's doing on Friday nights. He's got to figure out the red zone offense. Maybe less, you know, face masks or whatever he's doing there to keep the skin hydrated in Arizona. But got to focus on the red zone offense.
I mean, I figured I was going to get a fashion rant for you because they highlighted it during the telecast, showing that Kingsbury was going ankle-length pants, no socks. Looked to be designer shoes.
Definitely got
shoes,
a new influence there for sure in his life there that's into fashion.
There is no doubt about that, but we'll leave that here, Payne. We won't let that overcome us and or preoccupy us on the podcast. final look ahead number, and it's not through a key number, but I think it's two teams with very different results this past weekend. Denver goes on the road, wins outright against the Chargers, one of the bigger positions from professional bettors. That game from 6.5 ends up closing 4 at some of the sharpest shops out there. So the Broncos would have been a 1-point favorite. You're now looking at Denver, a 2.5-point favorite at FoxBet, as they'll play host to the Tennessee Titans, a team who did something, Payne, and we went through the play-by-play and the box score, I didn't think was possible in the National Football League.
Two opposite performances. Obviously, the Broncos win straight up as they were a 6.5-point dog at one point in the week. And a lot of the underlying metrics for the Broncos depicted them being significantly better than the 0-4 record indicated, specifically on offense. So you have that performance. Then you have Tennessee. They lose outright as a 3.5-point steamed favorite. That game got hit pretty hard from like soft 3 to 3.5. There was a group on that game. And I don't know if it's the right side or not, but certainly the Titans offense missed, what was it, 4 field goals. They had 2 touchdowns that were called back for holding. It was an absolute mess there. So the Titans are just so odd, right? Seems like we get really these inconsistent performances every single week. It's really a high or a very low, which is shocking, right? From Vrabel, who's been under Belichick. You know, it's all about attention to detail. It's all about consistency. It's been the complete opposite for the Titans. Interesting to see potentially if this gets to 3, what happens. Probably not a game we're going to talk about on Thursday, but yeah, I'm really intrigued to see where this line goes. I really am.
Let's put it this way. The Titans are one of the NFL's most consistently inconsistent teams. When you think you can write them off or dead, they put together a good performance. Anytime you think that they have a little prosperity momentum, they fall flat on their face. And Cairo Santos did that to the best of his ability, as you mentioned. 4 missed field goals, albeit 2 from 50-plus yards. So, 3 games.
Ball comes off his foot like a wiffle ball. It's incredible. He's employed in this league.
I used to throw a mean wiffle ball back in the day.
I'm shocked he's on a roster. When he was kicking for Kansas City, I'm like, well, I don't know what Andy Reid sees in him, but I'm not gonna like dispute the genius. But I can't see it. He's gonna cost these guys a game, and eventually he did, and he got cut. But
like
I can't
believe
he's in the league.
There's got to be a Gramatica or an Aguayo out there somewhere, more than capable of doing a better job.
Aguayo out there. Sheesh.
Kick a few field goals. But from the games and some of the market movement to the injuries that'll move the needle this weekend.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can see all of Dr. David Chow's outstanding work by following him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. There's nobody that does it better in real time, pregame and postgame, letting you know how the biggest injuries in the National Football League will impact your fantasy rosters and your wagering. How are you this morning, Dr. Chow?
I'm doing great. You guys?
No complaints.
Hanging
from
this in there.
Side. I can't speak for pain, though.
Hanging in there, man. It's week five. It's officially here. We're the grind, man. It's tough. No sleep this time of year.
This is where you put your money where your mouth is. You put the nose to the grindstone and keep powering through. And I guess, Dr. Chow, when we talk about some of the big injuries, there was a player who wasn't on the field this weekend but seems to be recovering at a pretty rapid pace. It's a game that we'll talk about in great depth come Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. What does the outlook for Saquon Barkley appear to be now, especially that there may be a sense of urgency with Wayne Gallman leaving yesterday's game against the Vikings with a concussion?
No question. With the Giants playing Thursday against the Patriots, it would be very unlikely to have Wayne Gallman clear in 4 days. So at running back, they're going to have some issues there. And I don't think it's going to be Saquon Barkley either. He's doing very well from his high ankle sprain. But in the beginning, and we talked about it, I thought it was a 4 to 6 week injury. He's progressed very nicely. I think he's closer to 4 than this point in time. But I don't think this is going to happen. You have to understand, he did not practice last week. He was a DNP. There was a lot of video of him, quote, running around. But running around some at three-quarter speed, all that shows you is how great of an athlete he is and how smooth he can look doing that. But even then, there was a little hitch in his gait. This is NFL football, and you can also have to factor in risk of re-aggravation. Look at Patrick Mahomes' high ankle sprain from week one that got re-aggravated there last night here as well. So I don't see it happening for Saquon Barkley on Thursday. I think another 10 days of rest after Thursday, and then he might have a chance.
Dr. Chow, you made that transition easy for me. Mahomes' ankle. He had it rolled up again later on. His left tackle kind of backed up into him and stepped on it. Mahomes obviously was heavily taped. He was hobbling around for most of the game. I know we've discussed Mahomes kind of being able to deal with this better than most because of his arm strength. How impactful is this, and what does it look like for week 6 against the Houston Texans for Mahomes?
Well, this just kicks out the timeline for him to get to 100%, right? I think he was getting close, and then he aggravated twice. And really, this is kind of the definition of cluster or domino injuries, but in a different sense. Eric Fisher, left tackle, out with the core hernia, sports hernia repair surgery. The backup left tackle got pushed around and got pushed into Patrick Mahomes and stepped on his ankle there. Re-aggravation of that week one high ankle sprain. If you remember, he limped around and barely finished the game, but got the victory. So this is going to be a setback for him. I mean, this means a couple more weeks of limping around for Patrick Mahomes.
Interesting. I did a bad job last week forgetting one massive injury. Davante Adams, the turf toe, he missed yesterday against the Cowboys. This week he'll have the extra day with Green Bay playing on Monday night. Is this just a pain tolerance thing at this point? Do we expect Davante Adams out there for the huge division game against the Lions a week from today?
Well, it's not just a pain tolerance thing. It's a function thing. Not to get too technical, but at least 50% of your push-off strength, and thus your ability to cut and change directions and accelerate, comes from your big toe. Not to make the Sergeant Hulka, right, you know, comment from Stripes, but the big toe is pretty darn important there, especially for a wide receiver there. And it's not, I'm not trying to make a joke out of it. That's where your power is. And the turf toe injury that he has is very painful. I get there's no structural damage. It's just a matter of time, and it's, quote, just pain tolerance to return, but it affects function, and that's the key. So even if we see Davante Adams on Monday, which I don't think we will at this point in time, from the get-go, from the Thursday game where he was injured against the Eagles, I said this was a multi-week absence. I don't think we'll see him, and if we do, I don't think we see him at 100%.
Unfortunate to hear. Final one I want to ask you about before I toss it back to Todd. Akeem Hicks, the big man up front for the Bears. He has been just crucial to Chicago's run defense. We saw that again yesterday. It was an early leave absence in the game, but Josh Jacobs had 2.5 a carry with Hicks on the field. He leaves 5.1 per rush for Jacobs after that. How serious is the elbow injury? Is he lost for the season?
He is not lost for the season. It's a serious elbow injury. He dislocated his left elbow. And at the profootballdoc.com site in-game, I sort of do some analysis and say, look, he's not lost for the season. No fracture, x-rays negative, dislocated his left elbow. And the Bears have a bye this week. He's not going to be coming back right after the bye, but it's about 3-4 weeks. Season is definitely not lost. He'll come back in 3 or 4 weeks with a brace. And yeah, he made a big difference up front when he was in there for the Bears, just like, you know, the Chiefs went downhill when they lost their two defensive linemen, Xavier Woods and Chris Jones, in that Sunday night game.
Chiefs need all the help they can get trying to slow down opposing ground attacks, given where they sit right now. And I know last week, Dr. Chow, we kind of got into some of the X's and O's of what concussion protocol means, how it looks in the grand scheme of things. You saw that Mason Rudolph injury unfold in real time. We can talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers organizational handling, making him walk off under his own power. What did you see there when he looks to be out like a light before he even hits the turf?
Yeah, the hit to the jaw by Earl Thomas knocks him out, and then his brain probably takes a second blow as he just flops to the ground and hits the ground without any, motion, and gets a second blow to his head. So it's almost two hits in one. Look, the Steelers did a good job with that. Look, I get that it looked funny to take the face mask off, but anytime you need access for airway or there's any potential breathing concerns, there was some talk about even a pulse oximeter on his finger to detect oxygenation, et cetera. And it was right to take the face mask off. I get the concern about the cart. There is a second cart there. It's on the other sideline. And look, if there was a neck issue at all, you know, you could also just old school spine board him and carry him off the field, right? But that wasn't necessary. He apparently wanted to walk off. I get the optics looked really bad based on how he was knocked out and how funny he looked without the face mask on and how out of it he looked where he had to be helped off. But, you know, whether he was walked off or carted off, I don't know that it made any difference in terms of what happened. And by the way, there's really also no chance that he's going to play this next week because he went to the hospital after the game. Anytime you see symptoms linger after the game and not resolve quickly, look, a Josh Allen who returned without missing any time was knocked out with a concussion, but by the end of the game, his symptoms were already done. A Darius Leonard from the Colts, who had his concussion a couple weeks before, his symptoms showed up after the game, and look at him. He's been out several weeks. So I'm not saying Mason Rudolph is going to be out several weeks, but I don't see him playing next week at least.
Sure, just what the NFL was looking for in Sunday Night Football, the starting debut of Devlin Hodges from the college football power known as Samford. Lastly, Dr. Chow, tonight's game, we have a number of soft tissue injuries that are plaguing some members of the Cleveland Browns secondary. Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams haven't really practiced at all during the week. We don't expect them to be out there. What are the kind of things you look for to get guys healthy that are dealing with those lower body injuries? I know you've talked about it extensively in the past, but what does it take to get a guy healthy, or is it kind of a case-by-case determining factor?
Well, certainly it's case by case from the perspective of the position, the kind of guy, the degree of tear. Is it a high hamstring, low hamstring? So they're not all the same. And I'm sure the Browns medical staff is on it. But let me tell you, playing cornerback is one of the hardest positions to play through a soft tissue or muscle injury. Look, it's way easier as a wide receiver. I mean, you know, T.Y. Hilton with the quad soft tissue injury, Terry McLaurin with his hamstring, because guess what? For the most part, at the snap of the ball, the offensive players know where they're going for the most part. The defensive players have to react, and the offensive player can slow up on a route and it's not disaster. A DB, you know, that's given up 6 points sometimes. So it's difficult. And I think it'll be interesting to watch and see how much and how Jimmy Garoppolo and company might be able to take advantage.
See, Payne, you need that dexterity. You have to be able to swivel your hips when I ask you the hard-hitting questions every day when we do this podcast.
There you go.
Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time this morning. Always informative when you kind of put a lot of these in perspective, not only from the fantasy perspective for people that are itching going, hey, when are we going to get these guys back in our lineup versus what things look like? One last thing, though, Tyreek Hill, should we expect him to see him on the field finally for the Chiefs, or would he still believe it's a wait-and-see type approach?
Look, I think he could excel on the field right now today. The question is, can he take a hit and have two people fall upon him? Remember, he was sent to the hospital last time because of concern with the compromise of the vessels in his chest. Remember that John Ross with an SC joint injury was put on injured reserve, guaranteeing 8 weeks out. I've said from the get-go, I expected closer to six than the four on the 4 to 6 week timeline. Is it possible this week? It's possible, but I still think it's another week away.
You can follow him on Twitter at Pro Football Doc. He is the best in the business for real-time injury information, as we said, throughout the course of the game, before games kick off, and more importantly, what the long-term impact can be after the games go final. Dr. Chow, thank you for your time this morning. Look forward to chatting with you same time next week.
Thanks, guys.
I have to ask, Payne, being the president of the Patrick Mahomes fan club, do you get nervous asking injury-related questions to Dr. Chow about his lower body?
I get nervous all the time watching him play.
Hold on. I'm going to put this in perspective for our listeners. He's the only player in the NFL that you'll text me on, and actually there, I can see that little bit of fear and some nervousness when he gets rolled up, when he hobbles. It's essentially a minute-by-minute update, especially when Mahomes is playing in prime time from you.
At some point, we'll divulge what we've been like hinting at for years about my investment in Patty Mahomes, because it's a little childish, although it's starting to become a little bit more mainstream.
I don't know if it's childish. It can be a lucrative pursuit if done correctly.
Yes, and I think it's only going to become bigger as sports grow, and you're starting to see some of the prominent figures out there discussing it. I know everyone's new favorite guy, Gary Vee, is discussing this new market. I feel good about a guy who spotted Twitter and all these companies he's invested in being ahead of him by about 28 months in this market. So that's a positive for me. But highly invested in Patrick Mahomes at this point. And because it's a modern day player, you have to worry about injuries, and that impacts the market. And so that's kind of where we're at. So every time Mahomes does something positive, it's very good. If he gets injured, not very good. So that's where we're at.
I appreciate you providing context on all of that as our listeners are going, what the hell is this idiot talking about right now? Somewhere along the way, we'll pull back the curtain of secrecy and you'll have a better understanding of exactly what Payne was alluding to on October 7th, 2019.
Doesn't matter the market. Just try to dominate it. That's it.
Monday Night Football, a very interesting game and one that actually bears watching even for the casual fan for maybe the first time in a couple of weeks. And we're looking at the San Francisco 49ers with extra time to prepare, 4.5-point home favorites. Total in this game, 47.5 at Fox Bet. First primetime start for Jimmy G. Payne, and we're going to see two of the league's most penalized teams on full display. Who becomes more disciplined tonight, and what are some of the matchups you're going to be looking for?
So before we get to the matchups, I think this is pretty interesting, and everyone knows that I'm not a trend guy. But the two we value and kind of factor into our decision-making process, they're in full effect in this game, and they're actually working against each other. And so the first one we have is, and for years, everyone would talk about the West Coast team traveling east for the early start. Nobody would talk about the East Coast team traveling west for the late start. And so we've been just hammering that home since, I think, inception in 2014 about the circadian rhythm and it being a real thing and it actually being more valuable than the West Coast team traveling east for the early start, specifically in the second half of these games, right? Like most of these guys on the East Coast are in bed during the week, at least. by 10 p.m. Eastern. They're not running out of the tunnel for another half of football. So you have a pretty strong advantage there in that regard for San Francisco. The element that's playing the other way here, and we've talked about this since the newest CBA was inked and home teams coming off the bye, the CBA is less practice, less intensive practice, all those things, right? So teams are treating these bye weeks kind of like vacations, and we've seen some of San Francisco's players talk about that a little bit, how they were taking a vacation early on in that process. And sometimes that extra week really isn't used. And so, you know, you think about this from the human element, Todd, and I, you know, I've never really been a huge 9-to-5 guy, but you're going to know about this more than I will. When you go on vacation.
Yes.
And you get started back up again. It usually takes like an extra day or two to get out of that fog, I would think. So suddenly your extra time becomes less time. And because of that, home teams off the bye since the new CBA, they're covering roughly 41% of the time. That's it. So these are like two trends that we have looked at that have logic, that makes sense, and they're playing against each other in this spot. So much so that I can tell you, Kyle Shanahan, the analytical guy he is, took notice, and he's just sharp as a whip, man. He crammed in three extra practices because he was aware of this, and that the Niners have really struggled out of bye, specifically last year. Like, Shanahan actually mentioned how embarrassed he was last season. They lost to a 5-win team by 3 scores post bye. So he made adjustments. Let's see if they work. But the funny thing is, like, and now that we've mentioned this, right, there'll be this human bias that's going to take over with whoever wins. It was because of this one specific element, and it wasn't because of the X's and O's on the field, right? So, like we kind of always talk about here, all these things are just one element or one kind of ingredient to the pizza that we're trying to make. It's not going to be directly the reason why any of these teams win, but it's certainly something to factor in. And again, we're not huge trend guys, but these are two that we actually pay attention to current day.
It's all about peeling back layers of the onion as you try and figure out exactly the angles worth tackling when it comes to a National Football League game, especially one that has so many different elements to it. As you propose here, clearly, Payne, when we look at this Browns team, the narrative around them has changed substantially with their win last weekend outright against the Baltimore Ravens as 7-point underdogs. And then you watch the Baltimore Ravens performance against the Steelers, and maybe you're less impressed by Cleveland doing what they were able to do running the football so successfully. But as far as sides of the ball, did you want to start with kind of breaking down a little bit of what the 49ers offense can expect from the Browns defense that's banged up, or maybe the other side where the Browns have all those high-priced, talented individuals against a 49ers defense that doesn't maybe get enough credit for what it's done through 3 weeks of the season?
I thought you transitioned well there initially, which was Baker Mayfield and the Browns offense.
Okay.
And listen, like, fully understand the Browns offense got back on track last week. It was against the Ravens defense, which you kind of alluded to being, you know, a little soft. And they were 29th in efficiency, despite playing the 7th easiest early season schedule of opposing offenses. So that Baltimore defense is really down. But what I liked, what I took away from that game and saw, and you know, all the metrics indicate it. I watched it 2 or 3 times. Freddie Kitchens, we know, he's been calling the plays. He was never giving that up. We discussed it ad nauseum throughout the offseason. But it appeared like he took back command of the offense as well in terms of like how it looked, how it was going to operate. Todd Monken's offense, we've seen the last few seasons in Tampa, right? It's this 3-4 wide type of offense. Kitchens ran a bunch of 12 after taking over last season, right? And against Baltimore, Cleveland ran way more 2 tight end sets. And it was with guys like, I think, Demetrius Harris, Farrell Brown, and Ricky Seals-Jones. They were all in the mix at tight end to help in protection, to be less predictable. We weren't sure they could do it with Njoku out, but they said, hey, we gotta try this anyways. And it certainly helped Baker a ton. Mayfield was pressured on 24% of his dropbacks last week. So it's something we called for. It came to fruition. They executed it. This isn't, to me, just some like one game trick pulled out of the bag. This was something that Freddie was doing a lot of last year. So he took back control. Let's see if he does that again tonight. Now, when you talk about the tight ends being on the field, I think it's probably important to note that San Francisco's defense does do a pretty good job at this point defending tight ends. They've allowed a 32% success rate and a 56 passer rating to tight ends on all targets. And I think generally speaking, and I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on this. I think we're going to find out a lot about the San Francisco defense. I do believe they're really improved. We felt that way since our preseason podcast. I said we should expect a tick up from Robert Saleh's defense. The answer I think we're going to find out tonight is how much the 49ers defense has improved, because right now on paper, everything looks perfect, right? Second in overall defensive efficiency, second in passing success rate defense. They're holding their first three opponents right now to a 32% success rate on all passes. Jesus, that's impressive. That's 14% better than league average. So San Francisco also isn't giving up explosive plays, top six in explosive rushing and passing defense. However, from what I have seen, right, the 49ers defense has faced the Buccaneers, who in week one, their key components on offense were dealing with the flu, most notably Mike Evans, right? He wasn't even sure he was going to play in that game. And then he got like a good portion of the locker room sick that week. And then in week two, you faced Zach Taylor's Bengals offense. Not sure there's much more need to be said there. And then week three, you got Mason Rudolph making his first ever start. So I'm buying the 49ers defense is being improved, but I don't think by any stretch they're the second best defense in this league, despite what the metrics say so far.
No, and there's some injuries as well in the secondary. You're going to have Emmanuel Mosley making his starting debut. This kid, an undrafted free agent in 2018, as Achilles Witherspoon dealing with a sprained foot. Jimmy Ward may or may not be back to try and help the safety position for the 49ers. So I think there's some real questions. And when you look at the 49ers, Payne, we've talked about it all the time, and you're the king of pounding the drum for the Pac-12 being soft. We need to see this pass rush rise up on national TV tonight and make a statement, because we know one of the weaknesses of this Cleveland Browns team is their offensive line. And if you can get Baker off his spot, he can be erratic at best throwing the football.
Absolutely. And that's one thing, again, that San Francisco's defense is doing a decent job with right now. They're ninth in adjusted sack rate. They've also had, I believe, 61 pressures in three games. But you think back again, it's the Bengals offensive line, not very good. The Bucs offensive line, that's probably their weakness on the offensive line. They did face the Steelers offensive line, but that's a unit that's regressed a little bit, losing their offensive line coach to Denver in the offseason. So that's the reason the Browns have gone, I think, a little bit more two tight end sets there against Baltimore. Let's see if they employ that strategy again here on Monday Night Football.
Sorry about that. That was Kyle Shanahan actually calling to try and get your take on the offensive game plan. So I apologize for that. One last thing on this one, on this side of the ball, Payne. The Browns receiving core, the healthiest it's going to be all season, or should be, with Antonio Callaway now returning from his suspension. Rashad Higgins has missed some time. Jarvis Landry clears concussion protocol, and Odell Beckham Jr. Do we think, and I'm going to ask this question, you could tell me I'm nuts and an idiot, do you think it could be problematic sometimes when you have this many options in your receiving core and you feel you have to keep all these guys happy?
Callaway is back. Higgins did, I believe, have a full practice on Friday. So you got four weapons. And I think that's the interesting debate here, right? With those four guys, it's a lot easier to want to play three and four wide receiver sets. And so I think that's going to be the real dilemma here for this offense. Let's see. And it's why I haven't touched this game yet. Let's see if the talent, if the personnel kind of forces Monken and Kitchens into this idea where they need to get back into three and four wide receiver sets as opposed to the two tight end sets. And it's tough to do, right? Because you don't have Njoku. So all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, hey, I'm going to be playing effectively, right? If Njoku's down, I'm going to be playing. Do I want a backup third string tight end on the field? Or do I want Higgins on the field or Callaway? It's tough when you put it in that perspective. But I think the Browns have to do a good job here being smart in their personnel decisions and keeping Baker upright as that being the largest priority in this game.
Yeah, be able to run the ball as well. I don't think they'll be as successful. Nick Chubb doing tremendous things, four touchdowns on the young season, of course, highlighted by his 160-plus yard outburst last weekend against the Ravens' defensive front. When we look at San Francisco, the 49ers have obviously made a concerted effort to establish a ground-and-pound mentality, averaging 175 yards per game versus a Browns team that struggled a little bit against the run so far this season. Jimmy G, we talked about, looking to have worked off some of the rust. A lot more proficient as a passer. The turnover issue against the Steelers, we can, you know, I don't want to say throw out, but I'm not sure it's something that's going to plague this team week in, week out. Can they be effective with their zone running scheme and, you know, trying to exploit the Browns if the Browns aren't good keeping zone gap integrity? Excuse me.
Those turnovers were a little odd. Certainly some of them were on Jimmy. Some of them were like you're running a pitch and the receiver's running, you know, in motion. And there was just weirdness about that game. Fortunately, we got a little lucky there, I think, with the Pittsburgh side. When I look at this side of the ball, even the early season numbers, they indicate that San Francisco is really good, but I think when I look at Kyle Shanahan, he's an offensive wizard. And this is the kind of game where someone who's a great game planner, a great scripter, a very good play caller can take advantage of a defense without its two starting cornerbacks. We talked to Dr. Chow about this a little bit. Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward, they're out again. And again, kind of going off into left field here, just a general thought, and it sucks that you have to do this, but as a bettor, you're going to have to actually look to see which guys are participating in practice now because there isn't a doubtful injury tag anymore. The NFL did away with that designation. So within the questionable injury marks, right, there's guys that have practiced all week and now there's guys that haven't sniffed the field. So it makes our jobs more difficult sorting that out, but it has to be done. So wanted to go off on the left field like that per usual. Anyways, I think we could see probably a big play or two from San Francisco's offense. They're number one in explosive passing. Now you have two backup corners. I think the 49ers offense, again, if they're awake and there isn't this post-bye lag, so to speak, the 49ers are a little bit different of an animal than what Cleveland's faced so far, right? Mariota and Luke Falk, and you had Road Goff, and you had catch-up Lamar. So this is a little bit tougher of a task for sure. I think it also becomes a little more difficult to defend offenses when they're multidimensional. And that's what you have with a Kyle Shanahan offense. He likes to be balanced, run the football as well. I don't really want to look at full game numbers here because it says the 49ers are only passing on 43% of snaps, which is a league low. Most of that comes because they've played with a lead, because they played some quarterbacks that they didn't fear could beat them. But in the first half of games, the 49ers are still just like 58% of pass. So Shanahan likes to use the ground game. The Browns haven't been as dominant stopping the run this season as we projected they would be. Right now, they're 19th in defensive rush efficiency. They're 19th in rushing success rate defense. Our guy, who we've mentioned a lot, Larry Ogunjobi, he has not played well in the interior of that Browns defensive line or as well as we expected. I think obviously still plenty of time for him to turn it around. Tonight would be probably a good time to start if you're a Cleveland Browns fan. This side of the ball, though, if the 49ers can be balanced, I think it's going to help their O-line out in a big way. We know Cleveland's defense has been better getting after the quarterback than they have stopping the run. Browns right now, 9.5% sack rate. So pretty impressive number there. We know left tackle Joe Staley is down, obviously. Justin Skule is his replacement. Gave up two pressures, was called for three penalties against Pittsburgh. Right now, Mike McGlinchey, the right tackle, hasn't acted like the ninth overall pick he was out of Notre Dame. He struggled a little bit at right tackle. Obviously, a small sample size there. But that's going to be the key. If San Francisco can be multidimensional and not just back there passing it on every down, you're playing to the weakness of the Cleveland defense. But again, it's Kyle Shanahan. He's going to be balanced. I think he's going to have an ability to take advantage of some of those missing cornerbacks here. There's a reason this game has gone from about 3-20 on San Francisco out to 5. And again, we're talking about it on Monday. So we are kind of being a little bit of a Monday morning quarterback here with this assessment. But everyone wants to play the game. I get it. But you've lost about 5.5% of your edge there. Laying San Francisco at open versus where we're at right now. So it gets a little bit tougher.
Other thing to keep in mind too, and it's been interesting to kind of watch the market ping pong around a little bit. You saw a wave come in this morning as we record early on Monday, taking it down to 4, and the 4 didn't last on the 49ers. So I just want to throw that out there, include that in some of the discussion. You mentioned Kyle Shanahan. There's a chance that we're going to see a steady dose of their backfield at full health with Tevin Coleman expected to give it a go here.
Get Breida the ball, goddammit.
Breida doesn't get the ball in the red zone. I've already resigned to that fact. He's going to be relegated to my fantasy bench from here until eternity unless he can break it. And I know it's not the same situation, but you know what it reminds me of, Payne? What is
Wendell.
It? Yeah, exactly.
From Varsity Blues.
My mama got Grambling coming to see me. We know Breida doesn't get touches inside the 20. He's going to have to bust one if he's going to score touchdowns. But again, different rant, different day. Should be a hell of a football game worth watching tonight between Cleveland and San Francisco. And of course, both will be in the unenviable spot next week and of taking on the Rams and Seahawks, who will have an extended period of time to prepare. So and places a lot of emphasis on this game.
There was a little over money here as well. I know if you just kind of look at your screen and not the actual like tick by tick movement throughout the course of the week, you're going to see something that says, hey, it opened 47.5. We're still at 47.5. There was a little bit of manipulation in this. And at 46, we did see a group go over. And for a lot of the points that we kind of mentioned, right? Is San Francisco's defense as good as it looked? Probably not. Is Kyle Shanahan a guy that's probably going to be able to take advantage of some weakness in the Cleveland secondary with those injuries? Probably. And then when you think big picture of a game that closed 44.5 previous to the bye of San Francisco and Mason Rudolph, all of a sudden at 46, you're thinking, okay, maybe this total is a little light. But that is why we're back out to 47.5, even 48 some places.
Payne, is you talking about market movement in lieu of making picks on all 16 NFL games every weekend?
I mean, the one thing that I've always kind of been adamant about is like, I'm not going to give out games that I haven't bet myself. And we're kind of entering that era right now, right? Where
I can't keep a straight betting face right now. Go ahead, rant. I'm going to sit back. Go ahead and rant, buddy. I had to open you up, get you riled up before we close up shop on a Monday.
Sports betting is the cool thing to do. So literally every, and this isn't like a knock on anyone. I'm, you know, give out picks. You're free to do what you want to do. It's your shows. It's your radio shows. But like every single like talking head now is giving out picks. It's like, I want to go in the opposite direction. Everyone's going right. Like, let's go left. Let's try to give things for people to look at and maybe assess and use moving forward. That's kind of always been our thing. And I just kind of refuse to give out games that I don't bet myself. That's just kind of how I've operated. I'm not going to take the bait, although I could have.
Damn it. I thought I was going to get you to take the bait. You've come a long way, Grasshopper, in your maturity and your ability to hold back when I give you.
See, I've always wondered if it's maturity or if it's just not like caring, right? Like I'm just, you know, I'm not going to be the corporate guy. Just, you know, own things. And when you own things, you say whatever the hell you want to say.
That's a very good point.
That's kind of been my thing. I don't know if it's maturity or not. It's frustration more so. I'm going to breathe. There's another topic, by the way, that we could probably do an entire off-season podcast on. It's a great question. I know the guy's first name was Corey, but I forgot his last name.
About metrics being built into bookmaker numbers?
It was about, yeah, in general, the idea that everything that is public knowledge is incorporated into the number. We should save that for the offseason, I think.
Yeah, I think we can do that because as I watch 257 move on our screens, there's definitely public knowledge and there's not so public knowledge when numbers go haywire on a Monday morning. But before I get myself fired up, let's get out of Dodge. I want to thank Dr. Chow, who joins us every Monday with his injury perspective. Follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. More importantly, follow Payne at Payne Insider and the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Payne, any parting shots, final
last thing,
words?
Yes. This Thursday, NFL Week 6 podcast, we will announce the iTunes contest winner. And we've kind of been stressing this a little bit. And go ahead, leave a 5-star review and a nice little sentence. If you do, you're automatically entered into this entry. We ran one in Week 1. We're going to have a couple more throughout the course of this season. If you leave a 5-star review and a nice little sentence, you're automatically entered. We throw your name into an automator online, and whoever spits out the winner gets a Bet the Board swag pack, which is t-shirt and a Visa gift card. So leave the 5-star review and a nice little comment. You're automatically entered, and the drawing will be announced on Thursday's podcast.
Sounds good to me. We'll be back with you guys Wednesday to talk a little more college football. Best of luck with all of your investments tonight on the 49ers at Browns, and hopefully we'll see, or 49ers versus the Browns, excuse me. We'll see you at the window.